Attention, pleasure seekers. What if I told you there was a toy that was so iconic that it practically set the standard for all my favorite products? Allow me to introduce or reintroduce to you the Magic Wand. Dubbed the Cadillac of Vibrators, the Magic Wand is more than just a toy. It's a culture icon, a symbol of power and unapologetic pleasure. I mean, do you know any other toys that have been praised in Time magazine? Didn't think so. With a unique rumble that resonates deep within, the Magic Wand Original is not just a product, it's a trusted confidant. And it's a sure thing. Never had an orgasm? Try a magic wand. Never given your party a full body massage? Try the magic wand. Listen, it's rightfully earned accolades like Vibrator of the Year for decades. I've been so obsessed with my magic wand, I even drilled holes in my bedside table so that she's always next to me in case I need her. Well, that was years ago. Because now there are multiple iterations of the magic wand, allowing you to pick whatever model fits your lifestyle. You can go wireless with the magic wand rechargeable, tiny with the magic wand mini, or micro. Micro's really mini. Or go for variety with the Magic Wand Plush. The best part though, all of them have the same powerful orgasmic rumble that made the original so popular. So if you're ready to make some magic, visit sexwithemily.com/magicwand and discover why the Magic Wand continues to cast a spell on the world. Magic Wand, not just a vibrator, an icon of pleasure.
And I think just again, the way that we talk culturally about mindfulness or exercise or meditation or discipline around any other area of our life, let's take those principles and apply them to our sex life, because all of it will benefit our sex life, which again is our creative energy, is our life force, just leads to a healthier, happier overall you.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. I'm Dr. Emily, and I'm here to help you prioritize your pleasure and liberate the conversation around sex. We're all looking for better ways to have sex, but what if I told you the thing holding you back is your own beliefs around sex and sexuality? My guest today knows a thing or two about how to realize our own sexual well-being. Author, filmmaker, and founder of The Sex Ed, Liz is a sexual wellness connoisseur. In her new book, Sex, Health, and Consciousness, Liz explains how to build a sexual consciousness for a radically happier, healthier life. She'll help me answer your questions on masturbation, shame, BDSM, and how to rewire the way we think about pleasure. Intentions with Emily. For each episode, join me in setting an intention for the show. I do it, and I encourage you to do the same. When you're listening, think about what you want to get out of this episode. My intention is to help you rethink your sex life through daily practices that will open you up to a healthier relationship with pleasure. Please rate and review Sex with Emily wherever you listen to the show. My new article, 7 Ways to Use the Magic Wand, is up at sexwithemily.com/magicwand. That's MAGICWAND. And speaking of magic wand, if you don't know about magic wand, it is the original wand-style massager. It was released in 1968. So it remains one of the most in-demand pleasure products in any category. It is truly a cultural icon. Time magazine named it one of the most influential gadgets of the century. Cosmo called it the little black dress of vibrators. And I have a public service announcement for you. They just came out with a magic wand mini. It is smaller, but it is mighty. It's just a shorter, narrow version of the magic wand rechargeable. And it's basically identical. Very powerful. I just wanted you to know about it because I'm a fan and I love the magic wand. So if you want to check it out again, check out this article. Get inspired, sexwithemily.com/magicwand. Also, check out my YouTube channel, social media, and TikTok. It's all at Sex with Emily for more sex tips and advice. If you want to ask me questions, do it. Leave me your questions or message me at sexwithemily.com/askemily or call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX or 559-825-5739. Just include your name, your age, where you live, and how you listen to the show. And it's totally cool to change your name or choose to remain anonymous. All right, everyone, enjoy this episode. Liz Goldwyn is a writer, artist, filmmaker, and founder of The Sex Ed, an online platform and podcast created as a resource on sex, health, and consciousness. Her fascination with sex spans back to her first job working at a Planned Parenthood at age 13. Since then, she's dedicated her life to exploring the depths of human sexuality. Her new book, Sex, Health, and Consciousness, explains how to build a sexual consciousness for a radically happier, healthier life through daily practices designed to help you embrace sex as a holistic part of the human experience. You can find more information on Liz and her work at thesexed.com. Liz Goldwyn. Congratulations on your new book, Sex, Health, and Consciousness.
Thank you.
I think it's such an important book. Thank you for being open and vulnerable at your own experiences. Because I think so much about sexuality is like we talk about sex and people want to check it off the list and I learned this tip or I did that thing. But you really talk about your own journey from like an inner felt place. Because it's not just about talking about sex. We have to feel sex, embody sex. We have to be more vulnerable around it. So it's a great example of that in your book.
Thank you. I feel like people have a very one-dimensional idea of what sex is. In the book, I liken it to drawing with like a 12 Crayola box. We're not even at the 64 Crayola box or the 120 Crayola box. So people think of sex as something that has to do only with penetration or between two people. But as you and I were talking about, sex is an energy. It's a life force. It's your creative energy. It's so much more than just the act of an orgasm with another person or even with yourself. So I think we got to get clear on that first.
How do you explain that though? If someone says to you, what do you mean sex is energy?
I know that sounds very hippy-dippy, acid trippy, right?
But it's so true. But the thing is, I say that all the time too. I always just want to hear from other people. So
yeah,
it's
not like necessarily a new age concept, right? This is a very, very old concept, like thousands and thousands of years old. And I'm sure a lot of people ask you, how do I do tantra? Or like, give me quick tantra tips. And that's the thing in our society. We want everything now, instant gratification. So saying sex is like an energy or tantra, for example, isn't something you learn overnight. But okay, sex is an energy. Let me break it down in simple terms. I'm sitting next to you and I find you attractive. There's an energy between us, right? What does that energy feel like to me? Can I feel into that energy? Is it an energy that I just want to enjoy that it exists? Is it an energy I need to act upon? What about if we're in a work situation? What about if you have that energy towards a colleague? Is that an energy that can be channeled maybe into a work project or into a creative project, or does that need to be consummated in penetration? So you can have energies, for example, with lots of different people, even if you're in a monogamous relationship that exists, right? These energies that you have, but you can also have that sex energy with yourself. You can have it. I think I talk in the book about, you know, sitting on the edge of a cliff with my legs spread to the ocean. So you can have an eroticism in nature. I do, definitely. You know, sometimes when I'm surfing and it's like pouring rain and the conditions are crazy, I just feel, fuck, I feel so fucking alive. And to me, in my body, yeah, like you just did
that. I just
felt
that.
Yeah, you felt that. It feels like a sexual energy, or you could be doing like a really intense workout and the endorphins are flowing after. And that could also be a sexual energy.
Yeah, it's that deeper feeling, knowing, and being in touch with ourselves. And when you're saying that, I felt it. Like I was on a wave with you and I was on there on the cliff with you. But I think, and maybe listening, you're like, oh, I understand that. But there's so much that gets in the way. Like you didn't just wake up and feel the energy. You talk about this in your book, Sex, Health, and Consciousness, about like the journey it takes to start to understand ourselves sexually and get rid of all the stigmas and stereotypes.
100%. But from a very early age, I did see other people's sexual energy. Like I saw how much sex seemed to drive the adults around me, and not in a positive way. Generally, even in my own family, I saw how much my father, for example, was very much ruled by sex. And my mom had a lot of trauma around sex. So from very early on age, before I could really understand intellectually or emotionally what was going on, it was almost like a color that I could see, or like it was like a gray color. And I could see that even now. I know that that also sounds pretty hippie out there, but I could see that with a lot of people, that sex energy is ruling them instead of getting to the bottom of it. So from a young age, I knew that like sex was this mysterious energy that seemed to have a lot of power over people. And even when I got older and started having sex, I wasn't conscious of how to use that myself. You know, it was sort of looking at other people and thinking, oh, they must have it figured out. They must have this sex thing figured out. And my first book and film, Pretty Things, which was about the last generation of American burlesque queens, I was married. I got married very young. I met my ex-husband when I was 18. So I spent my 20s with these women who were like 80 and the last generation of American burlesque queens wanting to embody a little bit of the sexual energy that I felt they had. that I didn't feel myself as a young married woman. So it was definitely like a lot of time in my professional career in this space was like thinking that other people seem to have a mastery of their sex energy and wanting that. It took me a long time to get around to the spiritual side of it and the consciousness side of it. Even though, like, when I look back, I could say as a young kid, I was aware of that. I just didn't have the language for it yet.
What an interesting route you've taken, because look at like burlesque dancers is the ultimate portrayal of sex that, like, back in the day, what we'd see women, yeah, being in their power, but really it's so much more about us finding that in ourselves. Like, we all have that, right? We all have that.
That's the thing. And a lot of these women that I felt were so in their power in their personal lives, a lot of them didn't feel that. And society didn't look at them like they had power. And in fact, for many years, they were ostracized by polite society and they couldn't get jobs when burlesque moved to, you know, television and movies. It was the male comics because they were seen as whores in of the day, really, to put it plainly. This, you know, this is obviously in like the 1930s and 40s. It wasn't until the late 90s and early 2000s when you had the Suicide Girls and like a neo-burlesque scene and postmodern feminists come around and sort of reclaim that. I think for the first like big chunk of my career, I was researching burlesque and then sex work. So the darker sides of the energy of sex. And I think this book for me is like the light, because I think you have to have both. I think so much of the way that we operate and the way we talk about sex, unfortunately, in all our culture is trauma-based. It's not pleasure-centered and is fear-based too. Like if you look at what's even going on politically, like not only in our country, but around the world. So it is focused on the darkness, but yet we don't want to talk about it.
But we need to talk about it to get us to this place where we can all sort of, I guess it is a reclaiming and understanding our own energy, because we all have it, which is a good thing, right? Like not everyone, I think what people can take from this, like you have your energy right there with you now as you're listening to this. And then it's just a way of like understanding it, recognizing it, make it, take a deep breath and feeling it. I love that you have some great exercises for people to just kind of like tap into it. What would you love people to kind of take from this? Like, what would be a first step?
So let's do it together.
Okay. I was hoping we'd do an exercise.
Let's do it together. I think a good first step that I think I talk about in the introduction of the book is breathing into your genitals. So what does that mean? Let's just take a deep breath now. So I think most of us don't really think about what our genitals are up to, except if we're going to the gynecologist or getting a prostate exam or having sex. But it's like a part of our body that's, again, tends to rule most of our decision making. But right now, how many of you listening are aware of how your genitals are feeling right at this moment? Are they sticky? Are they itchy? Are they numb? Are they wet? Are they dry? So the simple act of just taking a few deep breaths and literally breathing that breath, all taking the breath all the way in and then slowly exhaling it through your body, letting it travel from your throat, through your chest, through your belly, into your genitals, and then sitting with that and noticing, just simply noticing how they feel, I think is the very first step.
It's a good step. It's true, because we're so many, what I love about this is that a lot of us are completely disconnected. And then we expect that when we go to have sex with someone, that's the only time we pay attention. And we're like, why aren't you performing? Why aren't I connected to you? Or why would I feel anything? Or why aren't I wet? Or why aren't I hard? And all the things. But if you think about it, if you are literally not connected every other moment of your life to it, you think you're just going to like turn on, you know, it's like you need, but walking through life and being more, even if it's just a few breaths a day.
And a lot of people don't connect the breath work and that mindfulness practice to sex. But for example, in my book, I have a chapter, Bondage, Boundaries, and Healing. And I talk about some of my bondage experiences. And one of the things that I really learned is that you have to almost take what you know from like yoga into bondage, being fully present in your body, breathing, remembering to breathe. Because I think a lot of times with sex too, you can really get in your head. Rote play can quickly force you to be in your body. But the first time that I was professionally bound by a woman, actually, which I write about in the book, the amazing Bethany Vernon, she kept telling me, remember your yoga. And, you know, until I had that experience myself, I would have never understood what she was talking about. But I think just the act of being in a rope-bound corset that was so tight and kind of being my head and nervous and like, oh, I feel so insecure. Everyone here has so much more experience than I do. Just that simple act of like, okay, breathe. You're in the present moment. You're right here, right now.
It's such a good practice to remember to breathe. It really is. And to learn just that most of us are shallow breathers too. So you think you're breathing. It's like true. People think, well, I always breathe. If we don't breathe, we die. That is true. But to breathe correctly, and it's that deep breath where you're going, you know, you're going like, yeah, you're counting. Even sometimes it helps to go a little bit deeper into feeling your pelvic floor, and your exhale is a little bit longer, right? And that helps too. It talks to facilitate orgasm, facilitate the energy that we're talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely breath work has helped me have better orgasms and deeper orgasms.
So what kind of breath, is there a particular breath? And then I want to get into, because we have people who are asking questions that I think that I would love to apply a lot of your modalities to kind of help people with some of these questions that we're going to get into. But was there a particular breath work? There's so many different kinds, at least if you're into breath work, like we both are, there's so many different kinds. Holotropic, and there's... what are they all? There's a lot of them. I can't think of that. You probably know all the names of them, but I've practiced a lot of them. How would you, is there one that's superior to another one? Or
I don't think anything's superior to anything else. I think whatever works for you. Like, I practice a lot of different types of breath work. Right now, I've been doing some breath work. This guy, David Elliott, does it. It's healing breath work practices. And it's great because it's like there's a 7-minute one, a 13-minute one, a 21-minute one. And those are like pranayama breathing. So it's 2 quick in breaths and then exhale, like, but repeated. So you pretty much get high from it. It takes you totally out of your head, brings you completely into your body. So that's a good one. But sometimes when I'm having a panic attack or really anxious, right, a really simple one is 5-7-8 breathing, which is take a breath in for 5 counts, literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hold it for 7 counts, and then breathe out, taking 8 counts. So I don't think any one practice is better than the other. It's just there's so many different kinds.
Wim Hof method.
Yeah, we have the same publisher. A lot of professional athletes are big Wim Hof fans too. If you're an adrenaline junkie, or if you're faced with extreme sports or life or death situations, when we panic, we don't breathe.
And we panic a lot of times during sex. I often say to people that we have this trauma. I feel like when someone brings up conversation around sex, if someone says to your partner, says like, oh, let's talk about sex. Sometimes we even go into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Like we go into panic mode when anything about, for so many of us, when sex comes up, not only the act of doing it, but the act of talking about it. I love just talking about breath and experimenting around breath because it helps me just like calm down no matter what situation. I hope this will help people too. I have an app called the Breathing App. It's like, right, you know this app? It's a free app. It's just like breathe. And I'll just put it out of the car when I'm feeling panicked. So
that's good. Yeah. And also when you are feeling panicked, even in a conversation, it's okay to stop and do that and just be like, you can even put your hand on your heart. I think it's good to notice where you're feeling things in your body. That's been coming up for me a lot, actually, is like I'll have these moments where I feel very emotional and I literally will put my hand on my heart and be like, okay, it's okay if I collect my breath before I respond to this person. Like the world is not going to end, you know? But again, it's this instant gratification, this go, go, go mentality that we have where we feel like we've got to do everything right now, but we don't.
We don't. It's the practice, the power of pausing. I work on that a lot too. I jump over things. I miss things. I'm pausing. Even right now, God, I want to take a breath. That's such a good practice.
But especially with that's the thing, also with sex, what's interesting and what I really learned from spending time in kink-friendly communities is that pause before where the boundaries are set. So when people are working in spaces where there's a lot of fetish or kink and they're setting up scenes or play, right, that are not just like, let's take our clothes off and fuck, right? They're like, they might involve, toys, or they might involve role play, or they might involve more preparation for sex. There's a bit of a pause between that energetic feeling that we're having for each other and whatever it is we're going to do together. And during that pause, there's space to either discuss what's going to take shape. Like, you know, we both have busy lives, we have children, dogs, whatever, you know, so we've got to create the space for us to play. It's not just like we're getting wasted and fucking. And during that pause, I guess you could say it's delayed gratification, but it actually builds the energy and the anticipation. I don't know if you've ever had to ask a partner to get tested, for example. A lot of times that can even build.
It's like the edging yeah. emotionally, the anticipation. Mm-hmm. And we forget because we are so oriented around a quick fix that we want to get right to the orgasm. And so what I love is that you talk about this too in your book. It's like, it's so not about that. There's so many other ways. And I love that you could fill in those spaces for people. Like when I say it's not about the orgasm, people are like, yeah, whatever. Like, is that really true? Like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, but there's so these juicy experiences to have everywhere.
Yeah. And even with love or relationships. The pause. Because with dating apps, for example, like, which will disappoint a lot of people, it is about that quick, like you get a dopamine hit from that sort of like text exchange with someone. But what if it's just unsubstantial? Like, it's kind of like eating something like that's not really filling. And then you have this beautiful like 4-course meal that you could have that's going to take a little longer to prepare. But you're like, fuck, I'm just going to eat this bag of Cheetos right now. Because I'm so, you know,
I got to do it. After the break, I'll be answering your questions with my guest, Liz Goldwyn. Don't go anywhere. All right, Liz Goldwyn, I would love you to help me answer some questions from our audience.
I would love to answer questions.
From our people, our listeners that we love so much. Let's start with Bella, 25 in New York.
Hi, Emily. This is Bella from New York. I'm a 25-year-old female. So I think probably in my whole life, I've only had an orgasm about 3 times from a partner, but I can do it very easily myself. And like the way I do it is like on my stomach and like touching myself down there. So there's like a lot of pressure, but like I think I get fearful of showing my partner or whoever I'm with. I get fearful of like showing them that's how I do it. So I was wondering how I can overcome this fear, or if there's like a certain position you would recommend that could cause me to have an orgasm during sex. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Bella. Let's have Bella this whole notion that she's not doing it right, and how does she communicate it with a partner? Why can't I orgasm with a partner? There's a lot here to unpack. How can we help Bella?
Well, first of all, I would say, Bella, you're totally normal, and so many other people on the planet are having that same insecurity and fear and embarrassment right now. And I think that's the number one thing that I talk about in my book.
Deconstructing.
Yeah. This whole idea of like, what is normal? And where do we get this idea that there's someone on the planet that like is having award-winning sex every second? Even the top porn stars will tell you that they do not. Yeah. So I think it's amazing, first of all, that you're comfortable with having sex on your own and that you can pleasure yourself. So
right. Well, clap for that.
Clap for that.
So many people don't feel comfortable.
Yeah. A lot of people don't feel comfortable masturbating. I really think it's amazing when you can show someone that you're in a sexual relationship with how you like to masturbate. I think that's like a really great way.
It's hot too. It's one of my favorite.
Super
yeah,
hot.
Like mutual masturbation, like showing this is what I like. Do you want to see what I do? I want to see what you do.
But as I've mentioned in my book, I've had a long-term boyfriend who wouldn't masturbate in front of me. And he would get really freaked out if I wanted to masturbate.
This is common too.
Yeah. That's where I think the work is, mm-hmm. is like, we have to be able to talk about sex. We can't actually improve our sex, which we can improve just like we can improve any other skill. Mm-hmm. If we don't get over that initial embarrassment or fear. So I would say that I would like to manifest for you a partner who you feel comfortable enough showing how you like to get off. And in that dialogue, I think might just break the ice for you even. And there could end up being other positions that turn you on if you yourself just feel a little more comfortable with the partner. Because that's probably where the issue is. Mm-hmm. Not that you can't get off, just that there's something psychologically blocking you from feeling really safe.
That's such a wonderful point that a lot of our sex that we are thinking isn't satisfying or we're not getting where we want to go is if it's partnered sex, we're not with someone where we feel safe and we feel whole and we feel like we can be ourselves. And if you feel like you're being judged and someone's watching you and you got to hold back, like there's no way that's going to be a satisfying, fulfilling experience. Sex doesn't work like that. It's almost like the ingredients of sex is being with someone where you like trust and you feel open. And
but sometimes we're our own worst critic.
Yes.
And we're just we're totally judging ourselves. You know, I have an exercise in the book where I talk about how, you know, even though it might be cringy to stand in front of the mirror naked and really love up on yourself, like all the parts of yourself that normally you're denigrating, because it is. I mean, we are really terrible to ourselves and we wouldn't be that bad to like our best friend or a child. But somehow when it comes to us and we look in the mirror, we just spend a lot of time focusing on what's wrong or in our performance too.
Sex isn't a performance either. That's the thing. Like taking it away from like, it's being this present. So with Bella, I would say, first off, so common that you can't orgasm with a partner. And then she's worried about her stomach and doing it on her stomach, which I hear all the time. That's a very common way to orgasm. So like there's nothing wrong there. But when she says, I get fearful of showing my partner whoever I'm with, and we're saying like, that's the partner you want to be with. What about bridging that gap of like saying like, what does she do next time? Like, I feel like it's like you said, like finding a partner where you're like, okay, before we even get sexual, like I have a growth mindset around sex and it's really important to me in my future relationships that I'm with someone that we talk about sex, and even saying, this is uncomfortable for me too. I've actually never done this before either, but are you willing to go on this like journey with me to figure out how we could be great lovers to each other? Because I feel like right then and there, even though that's a hard thing to say, it's going to save you so much time from being with the wrong people where you're feeling like you have to perform and you can't actually masturbate in front of them or orgasm or learn or grow.
Yeah, a little vulnerability goes a long way.
Yes.
But it's just that first step is so hard for so many of us admit to that we're not perfect.
Yeah. So you're totally fine. Probably a lot of the criticism in our minds are that we are worried, even you with the burlesque dancers, like you're going to get to the point where you're as sexy as them, where you move like them or they have the answer. I think that never ends. I always think someone else has the answer too. I walk around thinking that.
Yeah. I mean, my entire book was written because I felt like there was some guidebook that got handed out to everyone when they were like 11 and I missed it. I say this in the book that I spent years looking at other people wishing that I could be as self-assured and confident and embodied as they were. Whereas I think some people may look at me and feel that I'm that way. But the way I look at myself, I'm like, oh my God, I'm just like a vulnerable, raw, exposed nerve. And full of insecurities. And, you know, on a daily basis, I go from like low self-worth and low self-esteem to like feeling myself, you know, it's a constant struggle and process. But Nina Hartley, who's got the longest running career of any woman in porn, she told me that she was jealous of my ability to have multiple orgasms. And this is a woman who's like, you know, one of the most sexually adventurous people I know. And comparatively, I'm super vanilla. So, you know, we're all measuring ourselves against this like gold standard for normal, but what is normal outside of a few hard no's is what's right for you. And we have to kind of go back and really look at those ways in which we first came up with an idea of what this normal was that we're comparing ourselves against.
That's the deconstructing. What would you say is the first step that you recommend for people to deconstruct it? Because now they're going, oh, that's not normal. Well, you know, and then kind of going back to old conditioning and messages and challenging it. Is there,
you've seen I have an exercise in the book.
She's got good exercises.
Yeah, I've got an exercise in the book where you take a moment, take a little time with a piece of paper, a journal, and you think about when the first time you heard what was normal, whether that be for your body type or penis size or vagina or breasts or orgasms or sexuality, gender, even or what a relationship was. And take some time and free write that. What were those ideas of normal? And then in my book, I go into great detail that this system of normal that we're comparing ourselves against is actually completely broken and based on really outdated constructs. So the exercise includes burning this list of, what you think normal was. When I was a kid, I was given these books, What's Happening to Me and Where Did I Come From? Mm-hmm. And they had these drawings in it. And Nick Kroll, who developed the show Big Mouth on Netflix, who I did a podcast with, he had those books too. And those books were actually a big inspiration for Big Mouth. So anyways, these books had these stick figures of like, you know, how your boobs were supposed to develop and how your penis was supposed to develop. So I remember being a kid looking at those and being like, my boobs don't look like that.
I remember that too.
And my vagina doesn't look like that. So like, oh, fuck, I'm not normal.
It's all you see. Literally, there wasn't even anywhere else to go. It's like one book in your house and those are not my boobs.
And now we have Instagram, right? Or streaming porn. So you look at that and you're like, oh, this other person that everyone is fantasizing about, like my body should look like theirs. That's what normal is. That's just not correct. It's really hard to remember that, especially in our age of social media. It's so hard to remember that, but that's where it starts. That's the work, is being like, okay, that person has a beautiful body, bless them, but how do I love myself? How do I set that baseline for myself? Because we're not going to be having good sex or even having good relationships if we're not coming up from a place of like, really like,
being in it, right? Like really in it and loving it and feeling it. And like, that's it. That is the thing, when you are truly embodied, when you're truly with a partner where you're not thinking about how it looks and how you feel and how any of that. It's when you, it's a letting go, right? When you're just.
It's a letting go.
Let's take another call here. Let's talk to Greg. He's 50 in Arizona.
Hi, Dr. Emily. My name is Greg. I am from Prescott, Arizona. And I have a question for you. I am going to be 50 years old this year, and I have had something happen to me in my only second relationship in my entire life. I've only been with two women. My first marriage was really bad. Second one has been great. But something interesting has happened the last couple of times when we were together intimately, is my wife quickly wipes up, you know, when I ejaculate, and I feel like she's grossed out by it. And so it's made me not want to have sex anymore. Like, if she's grossed out, why even do it? So I'm just wondering, is this common? Like, do women get grossed out by men ejaculating? I feel like it's not my fault. I'm created this way, and it's just what my body does, and I wish it didn't. I'm just curious if you can answer this question. Like, do women get grossed out when men ejaculate? Okay, thank you, Dr. Emily, and love the podcast.
Thank you for that question. I know, my heart, Liz and I both had a moment where we're like, oh, we feel so bad for Greg that he, first off, is just feeling some shame and feeling like, you know, his partner doesn't really want to be there and supporting him. And so, you know, my first thing is like, talk to her. It's your wife, you know, like, I noticed that you made this kind of face, and is that true? And maybe there was something else on her mind, like who knows? But I think he's got to get more information from her. But I do think that, sure, there are probably some women who do get grossed out.
Sex is messy, and humans are like, when I love thinking about how, you know, we'll gladly clean up a baby's shit. Right? We don't even put any judgment on it. Like, right. I mean, that baby could be shitting all over the place. There's poo all over your freaking hair and your couch. And you're just like, oh, honey. But when we look at grown adults, you know, the things that come out of our bodies, whether they're like a queef or there's, squirting, or it's messy. We're human. You're okay. I hate that you feel shame. I'm really sorry you're experiencing that with your wife. And I agree with you. I think you got to talk about it. And I wonder if she's actually said to you that she feels grossed out, you know, or if maybe that's something that you're sort of coming up on your own in your head.
We got to check our stories. Like, we create scenarios that are not even true. Like, oh, you know, she'd be like, oh God, I didn't even realize I did that. Or it could also be
like she's has a skin reaction. No, seriously, like it could be as simple as, you know, she wants to go pee right away after sex so she doesn't get a UTI, or she has some sort of, like, you're eating something different in your diet that's like,
that could also be
that's interfering with like her skin contact. That happens a lot. It could be a really simple thing. But it's like in that darkness where we don't talk about things, that's where all the sort of neuroses begins in our head.
Exactly. That's exactly. I was just thinking about, like, what if there was the equivalent of, I just pictured this, like, what if they were out to dinner, right? And they both sat down at like their favorite Italian restaurant, and like she took a bite of pasta, and all of a sudden she like did something and she like spit it out. Well, you wouldn't be like, just ignore it. You'd just be like, okay, babe, can you pass the butter? Maybe she spit out because it didn't taste good. Maybe she was choking. Maybe it had meat in it. She's not a meat eater. Who knows? But like in that moment, if someone has a reaction like that, you would discuss it. But with sex, we create this whole like, what does it mean? What's going on? And it's like, that's why I'm just trying to like normalize in that moment. If I'm with a partner and they did it, like, oh, babe, was that okay for you? It looked like you wiped up there. You were kind of rushed. You know, are things good? Like you just got to like check it in a compassionate, curious, open way.
Yeah, we do that in relationships too. It's not just with sex. Yeah. We do that in relationships, yes, like psychic sex or mind reading, or I think that this is where you're coming from, or we assume we're on the same page about something in our relationship. It could even be monogamy and we're not on the same page. Or it could be about like, I really don't like that you watch porn, or I don't like that you slide into other people's DM, whatever it is. We could, but just not talking about it doesn't make it go away.
I would say just check this story, talk to her about it. And also there are a lot of people who do have reactions to ejaculate. They don't want to. I've heard from a lot of my male listeners, my penis-owning listeners, who say like, I'm with a partner and she won't go down on me, or she won't swallow. And what I've heard from those cases is that sometimes there is a case where maybe she did have a bad experience with a previous partner. Maybe it wasn't good. Maybe she was, you know, she's got some stories around swallowing, or, you know, like that just isn't, it could be cultural, it could be conditional.
So, and it could be diet. It really could be diet.
That changes what you eat. It could absolutely change. So there's a lot to find out here, but I'm sure that she's loving you. I mean, she loves you. She's with you. She's your partner. And she probably does not want to make you feel shameful and make you feel bad. So I think you're going to get some information. And I would love to hear from you. Let's know what happens. Let's hear from Rachel, 27, in the Bay Area.
Hi, Emily. My name is Rachel. I am 27 years old, and I live in the Bay Area. I really wanted to talk to you live. I have some questions for you about sex with my boyfriend. We have been together for 2 years, and he revealed to me pretty early on his interest in, like, BDSM kind of stuff, even though he never called it that, but just, like, a lot of the toys and ties and all that kind of stuff. And so I really wanted to ask you live about maybe ways to like have my vanilla sex needs fulfilled and his interests fulfilled, because I want to keep things good for both of us. And then I have a more intense question for you, and it kind of dives into psychology and like understanding like why people have the certain kinks they do. I really wanted to make sense of one. Thanks, Emily. Take care. Bye.
So Rachel, yeah, what, she's a little bit less, I guess her partner's into BDSM. She's not as into it, but wants to explore, wants to understand the psychology of kink. And I know you write about this in your book too, about, you know, what we can learn from kink, the fetish and kink communities. You know, when you talk about communication, negotiating boundaries and all that.
But aftercare.
Aftercare. Mm-hmm. Love aftercare.
Subspace.
Yeah. From the Rachel lens starting out, what does she need to know?
Well, she seems that she's asking a question like, what could cause someone to have a fantasy or desire that might be deemed non-vanilla? So again, that's this idea that there's some normal baseline. So if each of us has a sexual identity as unique as our fingerprint or a thumbprint, I'm going to go back to the Crayola box.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I see this couch as a certain type of color green, you're going to see it as a slightly different color green than I would. We wouldn't even name it the same way. So it's the same with sex. You know, none of us are going to experience it in the same way or have exactly the same desires. So what she might at this point in her life right now at 27 feel like is her interest in sex could actually change in like 2 years, you know, or might have been different 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. So, and where her boyfriend is right now and his interest in sex, that can also change. So if she can open her mind to the possibility that like she might actually have a few kinks of her own that she hasn't even discovered yet, it's possible. And then I don't think that there's like some traumatic experience in people's lives that necessarily causes them. Sometimes there is traumatic experiences in our lives that cause us for sure to have look at sex a certain way. But I don't think because someone is more interested in bondage or kink, it means that there's some, you know, deep, dark secret in their closet. I think it's just the way we're wired.
Yeah, I resent that trope too. Like, oh, they must have been trauma. And so that's why this person's into this thing, you know. I mean, sometimes perhaps, but a lot of times, like, we just want to feel good. And here's something new and exciting with sex, to have different sensations and intimacy, connection, right? Like from the kink world too. I mean, I think that there's a lot to learn there, like beyond just the sex, but it's just so misunderstood, I think.
I think so too. And I mentioned aftercare and subspace. Yeah. So aftercare, I think, should 100% be instituted in heteronormative vanilla relationships, especially casual hookups.
Let's talk about it.
So aftercare is literally like caring for your partner after a scene, which is what like a play situation would be called in the kink fetish community. And I'm not a member of the kink fetish community, but I really appreciate this.
But you dabbled, it sounds like.
Aftercare is literally like, what do you need? Would you like some water? Can I cuddle you? Can I hold you? It has nothing to do with whether we're in a relationship or this is going to continue. But we've just exchanged an intimate experience of potentially bodily fluids. And it's just like basic etiquette, right?
Right, exactly.
And you can talk about it in advance. What do you need for aftercare? Because I could be someone that feels really smothered by cuddling, for example, but you could really need that. So if we talk about it in advance, I can give you enough of what you need. And then you can also understand that if I need to leave afterwards to regain my calibration, then you're not going to feel hurt by it because you're going to know it has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm taking care of myself. So if we go into like just a casual hookup, if we have that same thing of aftercare discussed, then people don't feel shitty afterwards. If someone needs like a check-in 24 hours later, it doesn't mean I want to marry you and have your kids.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean I want to change my relationship status and go Instagram official. It just means
I want, like, yeah, that's what makes me feel respected and whole and connected, is if I need a phone call.
Yeah, and it's like a bare minimum thing. And subspace is, as speaking of consciousness, it's this idea of transcendence or an altered conscious state with sex. And you can really, you can reach that state with meditation, with breath work, with drugs. And you can also really reach that state with sex or with orgasm. So subspace, and especially if you're into like, you know, bondage or kink or fetish, can sometimes involve much more intense scenarios that have like a longer period of altered consciousness. For example, when I was tied up professionally for the first time, which I write about, I talk about ghost ropes. And this was like an experience being bound in a rope corset that took hours. And after I was released from it, I felt the imprint of the ropes on my skin. It was an intense experience and I couldn't just like go out to dinner and like gossip. Yeah.
Right.
I had to like go home and calibrate from it. So this idea of subspace is that after you have sex, you are in a bit of an altered state of consciousness. So to have some containers for it, like aftercare.
Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking when you're talking about this, like, I wish there was some kind of, we have this, you know, the yes, no, maybe list at our site, which people love, but it's a, you know, a tool for couples to kind of talk about what they're into. But I just want like a menu almost, like, we're starting a date and like, I'm going to need a phone call. I'm going to need a cuddle and a glass of water by the bed. Like, it would save us so much suffering.
Yeah. So much suffering. But I think also like just, we can look at that in friendships too.
Yes.
I think it's really good thing to name your needs, mm-hmm. you know? And I could say to you, like, if we're friends, hey, it really means a lot if you show up for me for X, or, you know, I really appreciate it if I tell you something in confidence that I know you're going to keep it to yourself. It's just being able to name your needs out loud. And I think we do need to be nurturing platonic relationships just as much as we nurture those sexual relationships. And I think a great way to practice these difficult conversations are actually to have them with someone that you're just friends with and you mm-hmm. trust, because it kind of helps you break the ice. If you feel like uncomfortable having this conversation with your boyfriend or partner, have it with a friend first.
That's such great advice. Like someone who's like lower stakes, and even saying to them, I'm not great with this. I'm learning boundaries, but you know, I want to be an open space to share with you something that I need. And when you didn't call me last week, like that didn't feel good to me, you know, and just, it's practice though. Yeah. The more you do that with people that you love and your friends, it definitely makes it easier because it is a muscle. It's a skill set.
Mm-hmm. And it helps us not put all of our expectations onto a romantic partner, because we tend to expect them to be like a life coach, a therapist, mm-hmm. a best friend, a lover, a parent, all of these things. And it's so impossible for any of us to fulfill that.
That's the other thing that we think is normal, that it just isn't, right? Like, no. Your partner's all those things. And I think that's when a lot of the intimacy dies, or the romance dies, right? The sexual energy, because it's your person supposed to be literally your everything. And I think that I've learned that too, I guess, as I get older, just like so much more about our friends. And that's what we really want too. We want those people around us.
Spread the love.
Love everyone. Support your friends. Have these difficult conversations. Take some deep breaths. Have some really good orgasms. Thank you, Liz, for being here. This was so helpful. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
Thank you for being so open and so vulnerable and giving such important information. And there's one thing that I want to talk about this really quickly. And you guys, everyone check out her book. We will have the link, Sex, Health, and Consciousness, and your podcast, your Orgasmic Breath Meditation, which I just listened to. You said it's the most popular episode.
It is.
And I just want people to listen. Take that. It's 15 minutes.
Don't listen while you're driving.
Exactly.
You can, but you know, it might be better if you do it when you're seated or laying down before bed, and you can do it on your own. And again, it's just another form of breath work that really quickly orients you, like we did at the beginning, into mm-hmm. your genitals, and then helps you activate your pelvic floor and very simply link your breath with your pelvic floor as a way to bring yourself to orgasm hands-free. Mm-hmm. And that means hands-free, like no toys.
Yeah. And this is for all genders, anyone.
For anybody. Body part.
I think some people think, the pelvic floor is just like if you have a vulva.
No, it's the same muscles. If you're basically—
you can do a Kegel, you can—
or stopping your pee.
Mm-hmm. Stopping your pee.
It's mm-hmm. those pee-stopping muscles. So everyone has those muscles, no matter whether you
got— we all have it.
Yeah.
Because that's the important thing I want to explain to people, that your orgasm, how it happens, is breath connected to your pelvic floor and blood flow.
Directing more blood flow and breath to your pelvic floor is helpful, not just orgasms, but as you age or if you're getting ready to have a child. All of these things are important to have a healthy pelvic floor. And I think just again, the way that we talk culturally about mindfulness or exercise or meditation or discipline around any other area of our life, let's take those principles and apply them to our sex life, because all of it will benefit our sex life, which again is our creative energy, is our life force, just leads to a healthier, happier overall you.
So true. Thanks, Liz. Thank you for being here. Where can people find you?
They can find the Sex, Health, and Consciousness anywhere where you buy books, or you can get it on— I just narrated the audiobook, which was really fun. It was my first time doing that. And you can listen to our podcast wherever you stream podcasts. It's The Sex Ed, and you can find us at The Sex Ed on Instagram or thesexed.com.
That's it for today's episode. See you on Tuesday. Thanks for listening to Sex with Emily. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us a review wherever you listen to the podcast, and share this with a friend or partner. You can find me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Sex with Emily. Oh, I've been told I give really good email, so sign up at sexwithemily.com. And while you're there, check out my free guides and articles for more ways to prioritize your pleasure. If you'd like to ask me about your sex life, dating, or relationships, call my hotline, 559-TALK-SEX. That's 559-825-5739. Or go to sexwithemily.com/askemily. Special thanks to Acast for powering the Sex with Emily podcast. Was it good for you? Email me, feedback@sexwithemily.com.